Radio's coverage of AusCert's 2008 conference is sponsored by Microsoft. Visit itradio.com.au/AusCert08 for IT Radio's full coverage of this year's event and to hear Microsoft's AusCert presentations. Or go to itradio.com.au/security for the Risky Business podcast, honing your eardrums since February 2007.
Hello and welcome to this special audio presentation from AusCert's annual conference here on the Gold Coast. I'm Patrick Gray. This presentation is by the former Director of Information Assurance for America's National Security Agency, Brian Snow. He joined the NSA in 1971 after founding the Computer Science Department at Ohio University in the 60s. He spent his first 20 years at the NSA directing research and development into cryptographic and secure systems. And he also created and managed NSA's Secure Systems Design Division in the 80s. In this presentation, Snow argues commercial software lacks quality, reliability and safety. In other words, we can do better. So here it is, former NSA Technical Director Brian Snow's presentation to AusCert's 2008 conference on the Gold Coast. And once more, the audio in this presentation is okay, but it's not the best because we did have a little bit of trouble interfacing our equipment to AusCert's mixing desk. It's all sorted now though, so it should get better from here on in. Enjoy.
Security products and services should stop malice from damaging their users. Nevertheless, too often they fail in their task, as we just saw with the news clips. I think it's for two major reasons. First, too many of these products are still designed and using methodologies assuming random failure as the proper main mode of analysis for the deployment environment rather than assuming malice. There is a world of difference, and frankly, it's stupid to design your devices that way if they are intended to defeat malice. Second, users often fail to characterize or even understand the nature of the threat that they need to counter. Are they subjected only to a generic threat of an opponent seeking some weak system to beat on, not necessarily theirs? That's a generic threat. Or are they subjected to a targeted attack where the opponent wants something specific from that particular user and they're willing to focus their entire resources on getting it? It costs a lot more to mitigate a targeted attack aimed directly at you. So you really have to know what is the threat you face. Threat analysis is necessary. In either threat scenario, no network-connected resource can be ignored from a security viewpoint. Your weak machines that you'd like to ignore can be taken over by threat agents who care nothing about the material on that machine, but they merely wish to use it in botnets for mounting attacks on other more valuable targets. I'm told there are over 400,000 machines on the net today, a lot larger than that number, lost irretrievably to the dark side, and that the going black market retail price for one of these subverted machines is less than 25 cents in rental. Why are security products in this predicament? Because they still lack an essential element that they should have and possess: assurance. What do I mean by assurance? I'll give a more precise definition later, but briefly and simply, assurance work makes a user or an accreditor more confident that the system works as intended, without flaws, without surprises, even in the presence of malice. Duh. Okay? I'll give a more detailed expansion later, but that's the short bullet. Keep them happy. The major shortfall is absence of assurance or safety mechanisms in software. If my car crashed as often as my computer does, I'd be dead by now. In fact, let's compare the software industry to the automobile industry at two points in its histories, the 1930s and today. In 1930, the auto industry produced cars that could go 60 miles per hour or faster, looked nice, and would get you from here to there. Cars performed well, but they did not have many safety features. Notice, no doors, no seatbelts. If you're in an accident at high speed, you would likely die. The car industry today provides airbags, seatbelts, crush zones, traction control, anti-skid braking, and a host of other safety details. Many required by legislation. Anathema, I know. Largely invisible to the purchaser. Do you regularly use your seatbelt? If so, you realize that users can be trained to want and to use assurance technology. The software security industry today is at about the same stage as the auto industry was in 1930. It provides performance, but offers little safety. And that's the security industry, folks. For both cars and software, the issue is really assurance. Yet what is needed is security products for high-grade systems in the U.S. Department of Defense is more akin to a tank than a modern car, because the environment in which military products must survive and function, battlefields, has malice galore. That's the world I live in. I don't expect you to build that, but at least build the equivalent of that 2006 car so that I can strap onto it more cheaply than having to start from scratch to satisfy the military customer. I need the leverage the NSA does, and so do other national entities, to be able to do the job for the nation state. I'm looking forward to, and we all need, convergence of government and commercial security products in two areas, assurance and common standards. Common standards will come naturally. We have some. In the cryptographic field, there's the Advanced Encryption Standard, also NSA Suite B for those who want to use it. But assurance will be harder. So I'm here today as an evangelist for assurance techniques. Vendors tell me that users are not willing to pay for assurance in commercial security products. But Toyota and Honda penetrated U.S. markets in the 1970s by differentiating themselves from other brands by improving reliability and quality. What software vendor today will become the Toyota of this security industry by selling robust software? How do we make it more robust? Okay, well, first we analyze the system at design time for potential problems that we then correct. We test prototype devices to see how well they perform under stress or when used in ways beyond the normal specification. The South Florida fire, the fire was going to happen, but you didn't have to lose 4 million customers. This was a fault, and this was, had it been done at that time, we would have had no problem in Florida. Security acceptance testing not only exercises the product for its expected behavior, but also tests the product for swings in the environment outside the specified bounds, and with improper inputs that do not match the interface specification. And another nuance for security, we also test the device with proper inputs, but in an improper sequence, to see what happens at that point. We anticipate malicious behavior, and we design to counter it, and then we test the countermeasures for effectiveness. We expect the product to behave safely, even if not properly, under any of these stresses. If it does not, we redesign it. Assurance is an implementation and an architectural issue, primarily. I'm not talking about nice standards and products of research. That's not the problem. It's how you built it, to what sort of specification and how much care. I want functions and assurances in a security device. The military does not beta test on their customer. If their product fails, someone will die. It's not quite that grim in the commercial world, but in some cases it gets close. Functions are typically visible at the user to the user and are commanded through an interface. Assurances tend to be invisible to the user, but keep them safe anyway. Seatbelts in a car provide a safety function. Using nylon instead of cotton is the result of assurance studies. They show nylon lasts longer and retains its strength better in the harsh environment of a car's interior. The better, safer choice. Assurance is best addressed during the initial design and engineering of security systems. Big point. Not as an aftermarket patch. The earlier you include a security architect in your design process, the greater the likelihood of a successful and robust design. The usual quip, he who gets to the interface first wins. When you're trying to specify communication between cooperating modules. When asked to predict the state of security 5 years from now, I focus on the likely absence of assurance rather than the existence of new and wonderful things. 5 years from now, there will be security-enhanced software applications vulnerable to buffer overflow problems. These products will not be secure, but they will be sold as such. 5 years from now, there will still be security-enhanced operating systems and network protocols that will crash when applications misbehave. They will not be secure either. 5 years from now, we'll have enough functionality, plenty of performance, but not enough assurance. Am I depressed about this state of affairs? Care to guess? Yes, I am. The scene I see is products and services sufficiently robust to counter many but not all of the hacker attacks we hear so much about today, but not adequate against the more serious but real attacks mounted by economic enemies, organized crime, nation states, and yes, terrorists. We will be in a truly dangerous stance. We will think we are secure and we will act accordingly when in fact we are not secure. The worst of all possible worlds. Clearly, we need confidence in security products. I hope we do not need a major bank failure or other disaster as a wake-up call before we act, although some have happened in the background and we just haven't seen them been made public. The successes of ScriptKitties and breaking systems today demonstrate that assurance techniques barely adequate for a benign environment simply will not hold up in a malicious environment, so we must design to defeat malice. Believe me, there's malice out there beyond what the ScriptKitties can mount. During the next several years, we need major pushes and advances in three areas: scalability, interoperability, and assurance. The first two will come naturally. The third one, assurance, will not. We're going to have to work on that one and pay explicit attention. Major breakthroughs in new security functions may come, but we do not need many new functions. And I speak as a guy with 20 years of experience in research. If they come, that is nice. If they do not, we can make do with what we have. Believe me, we can make do. The real crime is that we fail to fully use the assurance technologies we already have in hand. I am not asking for the development of new science. The safety and reliability communities and others know how to do this. Go learn from them. It's time for a more detailed definition of assurance. Okay? We're going to get into a little more nits and grits. Assurances are confidence-building activities demonstrating, one, the system's security policy is, first, internally consistent, or you're toast, reflects the requirements of the organization. That's non-trivial. Frequently, it does not. Second, there are sufficient security functions to support the policy. If not, go get some more or change the policy. Three, the functions are implemented correctly. And we'll get to more of what that means in a moment. And finally, pardon me, the system functions meet a desired set of properties, and the big kicker, only those properties. No hidden Easter egg gifts. Thank you. In addition, the assurances hold up, through the manufacturing, delivery, and life cycle of the system. You can't skip any of those. You don't just worry about it when it's up and running. You have to worry about getting it delivered cleanly and safely, and you have to worry about pulling it from the field in a way that does not damage the customers that have been using it. We provide assurance to structured design processes, documentation, and testing. With greater assurance provided by, guess what? More processes, more documentation, and more testing. I grant this leads to increased cost and delayed time to market. That's a severe 1-2 punch in today's marketplace. Certainly, 5-10 years ago is even worse. But your customers are growing resistant. They're waking up. They're beginning to expect and to demand better products tomorrow. They are hurting, and they know it. Do you really want to hear your customers cry out? The movie Network, 1960, great film. Several examples of specific assurance techniques come to mind. I'll briefly discuss some in each of the following areas. You can read the slide, I won't bother. I'm going to run through those. Each one of them has a contribution to make. For operating systems, if they are not truly secure, and most are not, they can at least remain benign. There's a difference. There's a secure system, there's a benign system, and there's a malicious system. You don't want to be in the bottom. But the top two, either one, might suffice. Benign merely means not actively malicious. To get there, all you need to have them to do is simply enforce a digital signature check on every critical module prior to each execution of that module. Years ago, NSA Research Organization wrote test code for a Unix system that did exactly that. The performance degraded about 3%. That's all. This is something worth doing. It buys big bucks. Malice gives leverage. A benign system, even if some parts are rotting because they no longer pass the digital signature test, at least the virus did not get installed. It could not execute. And so you have dropped functionality, but you did not become malicious. That's the bad state. Operating systems should be self-protective, maintaining robust control, and enforce, at a minimum, separation, least privilege, process isolation, type enforcement. These are all buzz phrases, meaning basically the same thing. Pick the one you like, but you need it. They should enforce a security policy. Recall, security policies drive requirements. I love quotes. Recall Robert Morris, the prior chief scientist for the National Computer Security Center, once said, "Systems built without requirements cannot fail. They merely offer surprises." usually unpleasant. Okay? So get the requirements right. Given today's common hardware and software architectural paradigms, and by the way, we need to walk away from these common paradigms. There are better out there. Operating system security is a major primitive for secure systems. It's the big spider in the middle of the web. Everything's got to go through the operating system. You'll not succeed without operating system security. This area is so important, it needs all the emphasis it can get. It is the current black hole of security. The problem is innately difficult, because from the beginning, ENIAC 1944, that's not that long ago for when computers really started having a footprint. Due to the high cost of components, computers were built to share resources, memory, processors, buses, etc. If you look for a one-word synopsis of the design philosophy for computer design, it was and is, even today, sharing. What's the one-word synopsis for security? Separation. Keeping the bad guys away from the good guys' stuff. So today, making a computer secure requires imposing a separation paradigm on top of an architecture built to share. This is tough. Even when partially successful, the residual problem is going to be covert channels. We really need to focus on making a secure computer, not on making a computer secure. The point of view changes your beginning assumptions, how you run the project, and changes your requirements dramatically. Much good work has been done in this area, primarily in real-time operating systems for embedded systems. A small company, Green Hills, and there's others, this is not a plug for them, there's more, has a flight safety separation kernel passed by the FAA for use that kills storage channels, covert channels, completely and reduces timing channels by multiple orders of magnitude. That's an incredible gain. I'd love to get there to be ahead of the bad guys for once. And they do this simply by first separating, then sharing where appropriate between processes. Okay? They've also shown that this kernel can be slid under either Linux or a Windows operating system and still support the basic operating office suite on top of that for getting work done. That's not bad. Let's take a look at software modules. First of all, they should be well documented. They need to be written in certified development environments. Now, you've got ISO 9000, you've got the SEI CMM Level 5. Another more promising thing that I like is Watts-Humphrey's Team Software Process and Personal Software Process, the TSP/PSP. You can ask questions at the end of this. I'll explain why on all this stuff. And they need to be fully stress-tested at their interfaces for boundary condition behavior, invalid inputs, and proper commands and improper sequences. In addition to the usual quality control concerns, bounds checking and input scrubbing require special attention in security devices. A strong quality regime, quality control regime, with aggressive bounds checking and input scrubbing will knock out typically over than 80% of the flaws in today's security systems, and those flaws are the ones basically permitting buffer overflow, which is the lightsaber of a hacker. Okay? It's doable, folks. Massive mitigation is easy with current technology that is easily applied. Didn't say cheaply, but easily. Okay? We also need design modularity and good configuration control processes. A good security design process requires both the review team and the design team, one each, and that no designer should serve on the review team. They cannot be critical enough of their own work. Formal methods, it's not on the slide, but that's what this really means, should be used to assure modules meet their specification exactly with no extraneous or unexpected behaviors, especially embedded malicious behavior. Formal methods have improved dramatically over the years and have demonstrated their ability to reduce errors, save time, and even save dollars. This is an underexploited area and very promising, deserving more attention. It's really time to look, especially for major projects. Let's switch to hardware. Because software is not the only problem, it's just 80% of it, okay? But in the hardware domain, consider the use of smart cards, smart badges, or other hardware tokens for especially critical functions. Although more costly than software, when properly implemented, the assurance gain is great. The form factor is not as important as the existence of an isolated processor and address space, a little mini space for computation, for assured operations. An island of security, if you will. Such devices can communicate with each other through secure protocols and provide a web of security connecting nodes located across a sea of insecurity in the global net. so the security functions can stay up while the rest of the net goes to hell. I find it depressing that the hardware industry today has done some major advances by providing security functionality on many motherboards and specific processors, but that this stuff, which is already in place in our PCs in the house, are not yet widely used by the controlling software, whether it's an OS or an application. It's sitting there waiting to be used, has been for a couple of years. It's very slow uptake, folks, on the software side this time around. Usually hardware trails, the software blasts along. Software is slow on this one. Let's talk about, and this is one of the big areas where there's big payoff, because here's where the architectural issues are addressed, and that's at the systems level, systems engineering. How do we get high assurance in commercial gear? How can we trust, or if we cannot trust, how can we safely use security gear of unknown quality? Now, how you phrase the question, I think, is important. I gave you two different characterizations. For my money, I think we need more focus on how to safely use security gear of unknown quality or of uncertain provenance, as to who had their fingers in it before you got it. You have to find ways to compartment and confine malice if it does exist in the system. I don't have a complete answer on how to handle components of unknown quality, but my thoughts lean toward systems engineering approaches akin to what the banking industry does in their systems. No single component modular person knows enough to be able to mount a successful attack at any one given access point. To be successful, the enemy must have access at multiple points and a great deal of system architecture data. This impacts on how you build the development environment. It does not impact the cost of the development environment. This is just how you partition the teams. Banks partition the system into modules with blinded interfaces and limited authority so that the data at any one interface are insufficient to develop a complete attack. Banks also design cooperating modules to be mutually suspicious, auditing and alarming each other's improper behavior to the extent possible. Notice this will take care of the Pakistan problem of telecom and the BGP gating, mutual suspicion between those processes that were driving the BGP protocol on each side before that replicated around could have pounded out a lot of that stuff. We need to guard against unintended extra functionality in hardware modules, malicious inserts. The development process must assure one person cannot present a module to the system design team that's tested only at its interfaces and then accept it. You have to review all schematics and code in detail, line by line, for quality and that it meets the requirements of the system. This review should be by parties independent of the designer. This is expensive, but not far from quality processes today. In many quality software development environments, that address is already there. You just have to take advantage of it. I can't resist a brief aside. I once visited a vendor that we used in DoD. I asked the research chief if he could use cleared employees on the current commercial development that we wanted to buy. He said no. As expected. I then asked if he could at least use U.S. citizens. Again, no, since it was a multinational firm. Since he already had a robust design process requiring review teams separated from a design team, I then asked if he could use national affinity to the advantage of all of his future customers. If he used German designers on the team, put Frenchmen on the review team. If Israelis designed, let the Palestinians review. You get my drift. He thought for a moment. He said, that might be doable. And I think there'd be some value. That is not a full solution, folks. But besides being cute, it has some value. It makes it a little more difficult for a single paymaster in the back to be paying employees on both teams to do things for them. Okay? The open source movement can also provide value in this area. There are pluses and minuses, but I think it turns out to be a plus for security as long as it's a widely supported effort with many active contributors doing review as well as coding. That's the requirement in the open source arena. Further architectural constraints can be imposed to make up for deficiencies in certain modules. That's something called layered defense or defense in depth. Security is so fragile under composition. In fact, secure composition of components is a major research area today. This area of safe use of inadequate components is one of the hardest problems we have out there today in the architectural area. But it is an area where I expect some of the greatest payoffs in the future and where I invite you to spend effort. Let's take a look at third-party testing. Basically, you need somebody other than the vendor to say it's good. The government in the U.S. provides this for security products sold to the government through something called the NIAP labs, Common Criteria Labs. They're used by about 17 other nations as well. If the government certification process is not enough, then industry has to step up to the plate through consortia and offer third-party verification of vendor claims. I'm tired of a vendor walking into my military customers and saying, buy me, I'm good. And they listen and buy. And sorry, it's a piece of crap. You need somebody else looking at it who doesn't have a vested interest in the contract to make that a statement, okay? Third-party testing is completely critical. It has to be testing that is understandable when you write the report by the user. Finally, what can we do in the market arena? Market pressures are changing. The emergence of e-commerce as a driver for secure international transactions is certainly helpful, as is the entertainment industry on digital rights management. Both of these industries certainly want security laid on correctly and robustly and are moving in that direction. Lawsuits might help to lead to legal fitness for use, and we need to get through that. I want to make one last bullet. There is one other process going on now in the insurance industry, which I think is great. It's putting the financial shoe in the right place. The Rushlakan Conference of 2005 said in its results, many participants felt, and this is a direct quote, the insurance industry can incent best practices and create a market for security in line with the historic role played by the insurance industry to create incentives for good practice, from healthcare to auto safety. Moreover, the adherence to a set of best practices suggests that if they were not followed, firms could be held liable for negligence. I'll translate that, that's bureaucraties. Bluntly, if your security product lacks sufficient robustness in the presence of malice, your customers will have to pay more in insurance costs to mitigate their risks. Insurance is a recurring cost that businesses certainly try to manage. Differential pricing based on quality of your security components, it's coming. I checked just before coming to this conference with the senior manager of Swiss Re. They're still on that path, and they're going to pull it off. I think that's one of the greatest plugs that we can possibly get going for us out there. It's great news. In summary, I merely state that, recall, what we need most in the future is more assurance rather than more functions or features, because the attacks go against the implementations, not against the assurances. Rather than offer predictions, please, more focus on assurance. It is not adequate to have the techniques. We have to use them. And I'll be happy. I've probably blown the time limit. So no questions. This proceeding is on the little memory card that you got from Microsoft as a gift coming in, the little white thing that you got as a gift. It's in the business folder since this is a business track. You want to take a look at it, and you can send me email by clicking on that, or those are two excellent papers with a lot more content and detailed exposition on the material. Thank you very much for your time.